And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Dr. Will Davies. Will has recently produced a new book called The Forgotten. He is an historian, a writer and a filmmaker who began working with Film Australia following his graduation from the Australian National University. After a stint abroad, he worked at the BBC. He worked freelance in the emerging Australian film industry, including stints on a number of feature films, including Farlap, Monkey Grip and Hostage. In 1983, he produced his first television documentary and for the next 30 years has produced a broad range of documentaries, mainly for the ABC and SBS. Will was last on Dad's on the Air on 8 November 2018 when we spoke about his acclaimed book, The Last 100 Days. Today we get to talk about his latest book, The Forgotten, The Chinese Labour Corps and the Chinese Anzacs in the First World War. So, Will, welcome back to Dad's on the Air.
Thanks, Bill, very much, and thanks for having me.
So, Will, you've got many Australians interested in World War I through your books and your battlefield tours. What got you interested in the story of the Chinese involvement in that First World War?
I'd been going to the battlefield since about 1995 or four, and at odd times I'd come across these graves, usually at the back of cemeteries, in Commonwealth War Graves cemeteries, but at the back, against the wall, away from the lines of Allied cemeteries, Allied graves, and they had Chinese names on them, Chinese characters, and I wondered who they were. And after seeing them again more recently, about 2012, I saw them in Dernancourt Cemetery. And again, I thought, who are these people? And I did a bit of research, and I figured that they were a part of the First World War, a group of men that were totally forgotten. And this sort of got me thinking, how can we... I mean, I've got no connection to Chinese history or Chinese culture, but they struck me as men... much like those in the lines of graves in front of them that needed to be remembered. So my first thought was to do something about it. I researched them. I visited their cemetery. They've got a very, very large cemetery in a place called Noailles-sur-Mer, where I think there's about 1,200 graves. This is a completely Chinese cemetery, you know, where they did all the, you know, they put it in the right place, face it in the right direction for the Chinese Labour Corps, and I'll tell you about that later.
Well, the Chinese have played a huge role in Australian modern history, but your efforts at establishing a memorial, to establish a memorial in the Chinese gardens led to the title of the book, I guess.
Yeah, when I came back, I thought, what can I do? And I thought, look, if I can raise $5,000 and put a little tiny brass plaque up in the Chinese gardens to the forgotten, it might be a nice gesture. But I couldn't get any interest. I spoke to a lot of Chinese, wealthy Chinese. They didn't seem to take any interest in it. They didn't know this history. And I mean, for the Chinese, particularly communist China today, they're not interested in any of their history pre-1949 when Mao came in. So I basically gave up and, without any interest, I just dropped the idea. But the idea of the book did come from that sense that I felt that these were just a group of forgotten men.
And you got some encouragement from some well-known Australian people, I think.
I did. I mean, it was incredible how the book really kicked off, because I met this, who's now a good friend of mine, Albert Wong, a Chinese businessman in Sydney. He came out at the age of 15 from Hong Kong, and he's now in his 60s, so he's been here a long while. But when I told him this story, he knew nothing about it, and he was fascinated. That night he spoke to his mother. She knew nothing about it, and he came back to me and said, look, this is something you should write about. Why don't I commission you to write the book? So that was how it really kicked off. And later, we discovered the Chinese Anzacs in the course of my research, and he said one thing to me. He said, look, But I've never been to an Anzac Day service or a Dawn service or taken any interest in it. But now I feel with Chinese Anzacs in the AIF, my culture, my background, my Chinese history intersects with this Australian history. And I feel part now of Anzac Day and part of that tradition, which I thought was fantastic, you know, in terms of involving other cultures and other nationalities in our Anzac tradition. So, but he commissioned me to write the book, and he's also trying to raise money to have some sort of memorial built, which is terrific.
So overall, what do you see as the benefits from the book?
My hope really is to take forward that idea of Albert's, that Chinese Australians also have a part in this, the Anzac story. I mean, they've got a huge part in our history, as you'd know about the goldfields. And there's one terrific thing that came out, and I learned, I didn't know this before, but the word fair dinkum is actually a Chinese word. And it means, it's not fair as in F-A-I-R, but it's a Chinese phrase. It means real gold. So sometimes in the gold fields, they'd find what looked like gold, but it wasn't real gold. But when they talked about something that was fair dinkum, it was real. And that's been carried on into our conversation. So that's an interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah, well, that's such a quintessentially Australian saying, isn't it, to suddenly find out that it's actually traced back to the Chinese.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
There are so many Chinese in Australia now, aren't there? And it's changed from the early days. I mean, you could argue that the presence of the Chinese is one of the reasons for Australia being formed. So they've had an enormous influence over the years.
Exactly. You know, some claim that the Chinese navigator Admiral Zheng visited Australia around 1421 with his huge fleet of nine-masted junks made out of teak. Whether he did or not, you know, it's unsubstantiated and even controversial. But we know, of course, that the Chinese have always been part of our history. The first Chinese immigrant came on the ship L'Oreal in 1818. His name was Mak Sai Ying, and he changed his name after a short time. He changed it to like Mei Ling, so it didn't sound too Chinese. And I tracked down relatives in Melbourne by that name, because it's quite a distinct name. They didn't even know the story of him or the fact that they had Chinese ancestors, which was interesting for me.
Well, the book starts with a fantastic short history of China. The story doesn't start at the First World War. You go back and talk about some of the previous dynasties and leading up to where we are now. So that's an added bonus, I think.
What I found, mate, as I researched it, and I'm one of those people that need context. As a historian, I need to know the background story, and that my family, my boys, my sons laugh at me because they're always telling me how much I backfill. But I felt I needed to backfill this story because I couldn't tell the story of how the Chinese were in the First World War without knowing where they'd come from, what their history was, and their interconnection with European history. And in a funny sort of way, what's going on now with China, you know, seems to me a bit like, payback time. You know, the colonial powers, British, French particularly, were terrible in China. I mean, from about 1800, they instituted, pushed themselves onto China, created coastal trading communities and hubs. The British in particular, you know, they wanted tea, and the only thing they could really trade back with the Chinese was opium. When the Chinese tried to stop them importing and selling opium, which was doing massive problems to the Chinese community, they started a war. So then they had the First and Second Opium Wars. What we've got to understand in what's happening in China today really has its ramifications and its roots back into colonial history. After 1800, the European nations, Britain particularly, France, various nations were forcing the Chinese to open trading ports for them. The Chinese wouldn't allow them to go into the inland, but they kept them on the coast, the British in particular, who wanted tea, were looking for trade with China. They wanted tea. They discovered the cup of tea in England, but they had nothing to trade back. And so the British began importing opium from India. The opium, of course, did great damage in China. The Chinese authorities tried to stop it. In the course of that, they embargoed a shipload of opium coming into China. This created, the British sent in the Navy, and we had the first and second opium wars. In the course of that, Chinese were forced to secede Hong Kong. I mean, the Chinese had junks, you know, where they're sort of firing virtually ancient cannon against the modern military firepower of the British. They had no chance. And this went on over a number of incursions and contacts. And so China's got a deep memory for this colonial abuse that felt over 100 years, from 1800, say, to 1900. The Japanese had a go. The Germans forced upon them concessions. In fact, the Germans had a big naval base at Tsingtao, and that's where the Emden, who we might remember was sunk by HMAS Sydney in late 1914, sailed from. That was the German Pacific base. So this history of conflict with the West has its resonance now, I reckon, in some way. Come the First World War, the Chinese didn't really want to support anyone, I mean, least of all the British, although they knew in their heart that they needed to be part of the modern world. They needed to have a voice, and the voice would come at whatever peace conference would emerge at the end of this awful war. So they decided they would not send soldiers, troops to the Allies, but they would provide manual labour. And the manual labour wasn't sent from the government in theory. It was contracted by British and French and even Russian contracting companies that would take coolie labour from China, ship them to the Western Front, where the Chinese would work behind the lines, loading trains and ships and digging trenches and doing a lot of the heavy manual work, which in turn would release men for the frontline fighting. So this went on right through the war. They really started about 1916 through to late 1917, but in that time about 150,000 Chinese coolies or labourers went to the Western Front. The British formed them into what they called the Chinese Labour Corps, and these guys then were under British command and French and British Army command and control. By the end of the war, and even after the war, they stayed on after the armistice, some of them through to 1922, and they cleaned up the battlefields, they filled in trenches, they collected up the barbed wire, they disposed of ordnance. About somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 died, mainly of influenza, neglect, hunger, abuse, in a sense. They were paid a franc a day. They were very, very lowly paid. They weren't fed that well, although they were quite stringent conditions on how they were supposedly looked after. The British shipped all their Chinese coolies back to China. The French allowed about 8,000 to remain, and they formed then the Chinese community in Europe that there is today.
Look, at that point, Will, we might take a short break. I know you've picked a wonderful song for us, a song from Eric Bogle called The Green Fields of France. Can you tell us why you picked that song?
I know and met Eric a few times. He's a lovely guy. That particular song is about his visit, or post his visit, to Tynecott Cemetery near Ypres, and very close to Passchendaele. And it's a massive cemetery of about 12,000 Allied dead. There's probably 1,000 Australians in there. A couple of Australian VCs are in there. It's very emotional and very, very... this huge, vast cemetery of white headstones. That's a lovely song, and it's and epitomises the work I do in Battlefield Tours.
Well, how do you do, Private William McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your grey side? And I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day, Lord, and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the Glorious Fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick, and I hope you died clean. Our Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And did you leave a wife for a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined? And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you always 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, forever enshrined behind some glass pane in the now photograph torn and tattered and stained and fading to yellow in a brown leather frame? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Well, the sun shining now on these green fields of France, the warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in mute witness stand to man's blind indifference to his fellow man, and a whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lower you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And I can't help but wonder now, Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? You really believe that this war would end war? The suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down. Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest?
And that was The Green Fields of France by Eric Bogle, specially chosen for us today by our special guest, Dr. Will Davies, who has a new book called The Forgotten. Will, you were just talking about the involvement of the Chinese. Is that the Chinese Labour Corps that's the subject or the title in your book?
Yeah, it is, mate. It was the Chinese Labour Corps that I feel or felt were the forgotten. But the irony was, as I went through this history, I visited the Chinese Museum in Melbourne, and they were just packing up an exhibition on the Chinese Anzacs, men of Chinese heritage that had been in the AIS. Some of them tried to enlist, they couldn't because of they were not, quote, substantially white, but some did. And in the end, I think about 350 went into the AIF. About 50, we think, were killed. 19 received various decorations. Probably the most famous was a guy called Billy Singh, who became the great sniper on Gallipoli. He was a boy whose father was Chinese, his mother was English. He was a kangaroo shooter and a rouseabout up around Rockhampton, central Queensland. And he found himself at Gallipoli with the light horse, and he was sent out daily with his observer, who, interestingly enough, for any of the older members of your audience might remember a wonderful author called Ian Eardrius. And by chance, Ian was his spotter, his observer. Mm-hmm. So Billy would go out before dawn and clean his rifle and set up and wait for Ian to spot Turks. And in the end, his official tally was about 200, but his unofficial tally, they think, was well over 300. So he was one. But then there was a number of others. There was Caleb and Sidney Shang, who went off to the First World War, brothers from North Queensland, far North Queensland. Caleb came away with a Distinguished Conduct Medal and bar. Now, that's one below a Victoria Cross, plus a military medal. So he was a very, very highly decorated soldier. He and Caleb and his younger brother Sydney returned to Australia and went back into society. They were generally well treated, the Chinese Anzacs. They were, many of them, of course, were not that Chinese looking, so they slipped in, but they had Chinese names. And there were six brothers, a great story, six brothers called the Langtips from a Victorian sort of goldfield area. And the six of the boys turn up to the recruiting tables to join the light horse, and the light horse officer there said, look, I'll take you three, you other three go home. In the end, four of them went. But one of them was a character, his name was Leslie Langtip. He was in the charge at Beersheba, and he also sort of became famous in the family because at one point he saw this English officer berating his Arab troops, and he went up to him and he said, mate, that's not how you should, you know, I mean, he's a private soldier, you know, here he is being cheeky to an English officer. That's not how you should bloody treat your men. And when the English officer sort of arced up and told him to bugger off, he smacked him in the face. And it turned out this was Lawrence of Arabia. So it was a great moment in Australian history where we put one into the famous Lawrence. But these boys were generally treated well. They came back, but they also suffered, much like many of the First World War returned men and sort of untrained. They went away from, left school and went to the war. They had no careers, they had no prospects, and life was pretty hard. So, yeah, it was an interesting chapter to write into a story that I hadn't planned.
Yes, it sounds like the Chinese on the battlefield were respected, but there was a sort of bookended by discrimination in getting into the army in the first place, and then when they came back, really not recognised for their contribution.
Yeah, and I mean, for many of these families and these Chinese, they'd been discriminated against forever. you know, and you wondered why they actually took the trouble to enlist anyway. So, but it's another group of forgotten men and an untold story in our history.
Well, interestingly, your book is printed in both English and Chinese.
Mm.
Is it available everywhere?
Look, I don't quite know where it's available. It's only been out a couple of months. The Governor General launched it with a virtual launch 2 or 3 months ago. I don't know if it's in your local bookshop or whether it's on Booktopia, but if anyone's interested in a copy, I can sell them a signed copy, $30 plus $10 postage if they're interested, and if they just email me at info@willdavies.net.au, I can get that out to them.
We'll have that on our website. Now, Will, we've reached a stage where I love asking this question. What is next for Dr. Will Davies?
Look, it's always hard, mate. I've just submitted another book to my publisher, Penguin Random House, called Secret and Special, and it's about the Z Special Unit, which, for anyone that knows about the Krait Raid on Singapore, they were effectively special boys. But this is the history of their operations north of Australia during the Second World War. So I've got that off to the publishers. This pandemic has closed down my Pozieres School project for a whole lot of reasons, but I've got to try and get that back underway. But in the meantime, I'm just trying to think of what I do next, write another book or what's next for me. I'm hoping to resume my battlefield tours in April, May next year. And again, if anyone's interested, they can drop me an email. Yeah, you know, I'm always full of challenges and ideas, as you probably know, but I haven't settled on one to get on with.
Well, we'll try and get you back while there's this lull, because there are so many stories and historical stories in Australia's past that we'd love to hear a bit more from you. But unfortunately, we've got no more time today. So I just wanted to say that we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to that website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me to give a huge thank you, Dr. Will Davies. Will, thank you very much for being a guest again on Dads on the Air.
Good on you, Bill. Thanks very much, and always glad to help.
And we'll be back next week with another show.